Tonight's share is dedicated for Menucha Bat Osher Yecheskel. We're holding down Parshas Toldos, where we're kind of passing along the generations of what really led ultimately to the building of Klal Yisrael. Last time we were together, we discussed heavily Avraham Avinu, what he added to Klal Yisrael, his midos, his ideology. And now we're going to be focusing on the next generation, Yitzchak, and ultimately to Yaakov, and understanding how Klal Yisrael grew and developed to what we know of it as today. Avraham Avinu, we mentioned as an Ish Chesed, a person who lived Chesed. That was his whole being. I would just like to add one more pshat to Avraham Avinu's life before we move on to Yitzchak. One of the reasons Mepharshim explained why Avraham Avinu loved Chesed so much was because Avraham Avinu loved Hashem so much. Avraham Avinu looked and viewed every human being as a Tzelem Elohim. If we were to view every person as a little bit of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you love HaKadosh Baruch Hu so much, you would love people that much also. The reason why Avraham Avinu cared about every individual, no matter who they were, their background, because he looked at every little person and said, there's a little bit of Hashem, the Tzelem Elohim. And Avraham Avinu loved Hashem so much that to him, every person was a little bit of what he loved, and therefore he cared so much for every individual. The Rambam writes that part of a job of a Jew is not only for us to love Hashem, is to get everyone else to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If we show everyone how great HaKadosh Baruch Hu is because we love HaKadosh Baruch Hu so much, by doing so, we will then be able to share the wealth, so to say, with everyone else who will appreciate what does it mean to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our lives. But we know that Klal Yisrael continues on after Avraham Avinu to the next generation, to Yitzchak. Parsha told us is the parsha that deals predominantly with Yitzchak. It's not even the whole parsha talks about Yitzchak. It's only about half the parsha. And Yitzchak and Rivka is a very interesting relationship, and we need to discuss both of them individually and together as a couple, Yitzchak and Rivka. The beginning of this week's parsha opens up. The Eila told us Yitzchak ben Avraham. These are the children, Yitzchak ben Avraham. Avraham hoilides Yitzchak. Avraham gave birth to Yitzchak. Seems to be very strange. We all know that by now. Already halfway through the Sefer, we know Avraham Avinu fathered Yitzchak. Why is the Torah repeating to us this idea of Avraham hoiledes Yitzchak? The Rashbam on his commentary to Chumash points out that the reason why the Torah repeats it to us again is because at the end of Chayisara we referenced again this Yishmael. We know Yishmael is a very funny situation. On one hand, he's the son of Avraham Avinu. On the other hand, but he's not Avraham Avinu and Sarah's son. So he's like in a tough place over here to how, where he stands with regard to Klal Yisrael. So the Rashbam writes, the Torah is repeating it. Let's get this clear, says the Torah. Avraham hoilides Yitzchak, and the real children is Avraham. Yishmael maybe is a son, but let's get this clear. The real deal. The real son is going to be Yitzchak. And that's something we fight today out of Yemizeh with the Arabs. They're still convinced that Yishmael was the main son and Yitzchak was the secondary son. But the Torah is telling us that that's not the case. The Torah is telling us that Avraham Avinu is the main child. And that's why the Torah repeats, Avraham hoilides Yitzchak, he gave birth to him. The Sifsei Chachamim learns slightly different. He learns that the Eile is referencing back to last week's parsha. What's the referencing back? He's saying that, I'm giving you a heads up, we're going to have a similar situation to what we had with Avraham Avinu. Just like Avraham Avinu had two children, we'll call it the good son and the bad son, he had the Yitzchak and the Yishmael, we're going to have that, it's going to repeat itself again. We're going to have a Yaakov and an Esav, that's going to be the second generation of good and evil coming from the same father, from a special person like Yitzchak. Rashi tells us a different pshat that everyone's aware of. Everyone knows the second pshat of Rashi. Rashi tells us over here, why is the Torah telling me Avraham hoilides Yitzchak? So Rashi says, Dover Acher, since the Torah told us that Yitzchak was the son of Avraham, the Torah has to repeat it again. Why? So Rashi tells us because of the Leitzane Hador, the jokesters of the generation were spreading rumors that Avimelech fathered Yitzchak. Why? Says Rashi, because it makes a lot of sense. Avraham and Sarah lived together so many years, no baby. All of a sudden, one day she gets captured by Avimelech, she comes back pregnant. So you do the math, you figure to yourself, something doesn't sound right. Must be that Avimelech is the father. So says Rashi, everyone was convinced Avimelech was the father. So what happened? Ma'os HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how did Hashem rectify this? So Tzar Klaster Ponav Sheyitzchak Deimel Avraham. He made Yitzchak and Avraham Avinu look alike. This was before DNA testing. Today it's easy. You run a DNA test, everyone knows who's the father. Back then it wasn't an option, so they had to make them look alike. So now everyone knows that Avraham Avinu fathered Yitzchak. This is a very famous Rashi in this week's parsha. The truth is, if you look at the Gemara in Bamitzi, Daf Pei Zayin, the Gemara tells even a more dramatic version of the story. The Gemara tells us in Bamitzia Pezayin that this wasn't the beginning of the storyline. What really happened was that the Pasuk tells us that Avraham Avinu made a party, which Rashi says wasn't his bris, it was his birthday. After Chavdal Chadosh, he made a birthday party, and he invited everyone to come. The Gemara says in Bamitzia, it's because already at that time, the rumor on the streets was that Avraham Avinu and Sarah picked this baby up from the streets. They're not the parents, they found the baby outside in the street, and they picked it up and bring it as their own, but Sarah never gave birth. So the Gemara says, Sarah said, I'll prove to you I gave birth. I'm going to nurse everyone's babies. And so therefore Sarah proved it, and she did it, and they weren't convinced. The Gemara says they still thought this whole thing's a scam. So what happened, says the Gemara? Hashem made a miracle. Right then at the party, Hashem changed Yitzchak's face and made him look like Avraham Avinu. I mean, till now, he looked like, Sarah's side of the family, right? All of a sudden now, in the middle of this party, when everyone's getting on his back and saying, you're not the father, you're not the father, Hashem made a miracle then and there. Switched the entire look of Yitzchak, and now all of a sudden he looked like his father Avraham Avinu. A pretty big miracle, to which is clearly Kenegra Teva, and something way beyond the normal ways of running the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did this because of these late son and these troublemakers that were creating rumors about Avraham Avinu and Sarah's child Yitzchak. So on this Rashi, many Mefarshim asked the Kasha that why late son Hadar? What's a late? It's a jokester. These guys that are spreading the rumors, they're not jokesters. They're Rishayim. They're Shakronim. They're evil people. Why are we calling them jokesters? Like Sonny Hador is a jokester. Why is that the word that Rashi chose to describe these fellows? If I was writing Rashi, I would have wrote the Rishayim. They're liars. Forget that. They're a Shak. They're lying. Shakronim. Why do we refer to them as late Sonim? The Beis Halevi has a very famous piece on this parasha. The Beis Halevi goes on to ask numerous questions. He says, first of all, what were they thinking exactly? He says, how on earth could it have been Avimelech was the father? Rashi says that right when Avimelech took her, Avimelech got punished, they wasn't able to have any relations. So how did that happen? Look in the story. The story says the moment he took Sarah, boom, he got hit, punishment, he wasn't able to do anything. So it's pretty hard to conceive a baby that way. That's one question the Beis Halevi asks. He says, secondly, what are you trying to belittle? That Avraham Avinu wasn't the father? Avraham Avinu was never the issue to discuss. Avraham Avinu was able to bore kids. He had a Yishmol already. We weren't discussing Avraham Avinu's ability to have a child. What are you trying to tell me? Avraham Avinu wasn't the father. Avraham Avinu had no problem. Had no infertility issue. He could have been the father. What was the whole story? What are you trying to accomplish? And you think Avimelech was such a youngster? Avimelech was also an older guy. So still, you still have the same idea of a miracle of two old people having a baby. So why the cause? What was the motivation behind his late son? So the answer that is given, there's numerous answers given. One answer is that, what did they want to accomplish? They wanted to say that Avraham Avinu wasn't the father. So what? So who still gave birth? Sarah still gave birth. That's not disputed. Sarah was old. This was a miracle. An old lady giving birth is a miracle. So who cares who the father is? Why did that little belittle the nace? So they want to say that that exactly was the idea of the late son. What does a late do? A late belittles all that is important. So when you look at this storyline, you say, wow, this was a major miracle. Two old people having a baby. You say, wow, God must be running the world. And then you say, you know what, maybe not. Maybe it was one old person or one young person. That's not such a miracle anymore. You belittle the whole greatness of the miracle. That's what a late is. It's not about lying. It's not about being evil. It's about being a late. What does a late do? He takes everything that's serious, that's important, and he belittles it. What is the example that the Chazal give us for a late? Kairach. Kairach v'cha'adosa is the example of a late. What did Kairach do that was so jokester? He didn't make any jokes. What was he such a... Why is he called the late? The answer is the Mishnah Novus is telling us a late is not someone who makes jokes. A late is someone who takes something which everyone else views as a big deal, as important, as sacred, and says, you know, it's not that it's such a big deal. It's not that important. It's not so special. That's what Kairach did. What did he want to do? He wanted to take Moshe Rabbeinu that everyone held to be the great leader and say, he's not so good. He's not such a big deal. He makes up the rules as he wants. He's pocketing money. He's not so legitimate. Take everything that is viewed as important and belittle it. So therefore, these people wanted to do the same thing. They want to take this massive miracle that HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed, where two people, Al Pi Derech HaTeva, should not conceive a baby, take it away. It's still going to be a miracle? Yes. But you chip away a little bit of the miracle, you belittle. That's the job of a leitz, is to belittle what happened. The Brisker Rav suggests a slightly different shot. He thinks that what they wanted to show the world was, look, miracles happen to bad people also. If Avimelech would have been the father, and Sarah was the mother, you know what the world is going to see? Look what happened. A bad guy, Avimelech, in Russia, lives with a woman he's not supposed to. Miracles happen. So why do you think that miracles only happen to good people? Avraham Avinu. Miracles happen to bad people. That's what they wanted to accomplish. They wanted to take a new style in life that people will actually think that you could be a bad person. And don't worry, Hashem will still perform miracles for you. That's the Biskei Rav's pshat. Rav Moshe Sternbach in his sefer suggests that what they wanted to do was they wanted to take Avram Avinu, this great Avram Avinu, that we held to be the great leader of the generation, and say, this wasn't him. He wasn't involved in the miracle. There was a miracle, but it wasn't our Avram Avinu. We have Avram Avinu on this pedestal, that he is beyond regular, he is lamala from the rest of us. It didn't happen with him. Says Rav Moshe Sternbach, if you take the Avram Avinu part of the equation out, you say to yourself, Avram Avinu, no great shakes. He didn't have the miracle. It wasn't him. It was with Avimelech. So yes, Sarah was still great, but we chip away, so to say, at the greatness of Avimelech, of Avram Avinu. Rav Pam, in his Sefer on Chumash, he says, you know what the agenda of these guys were? They wanted to break the Messiah of Klal Yisrael. They wanted to say, well, if Avram Avinu was not the father of Yitzchak, so now when we keep the generations going, now Yitzchak is going to have a Yaakov, Yaakov is going to have 12 shortim. The whole Klal Yisrael that we know was really from an Avimelech. It takes the whole Mishpachas Am Yisrael, the great nation of Klal Yisrael that we know and love and respect, and say the whole thing is illegitimate. Our forefather wasn't Avram Avinu. It was Avimelech. And says Rav Pam, what they wanted to do was what we call today Pigam Mishpacha. They wanted to take the whole family, us, our family of Am Yisrael, and say we're not perfect. We're an illegitimate family. And he goes on to say a story with Reb Kiveger. The great Reb Kiveger wrote a tshuva, where someone was asking him about a certain situation with a woman who was an aguna. And Reb Kiveger was trying to figure out a way to permit her to remarry. And Reb Kiveger was already ill. So his son wrote the tshuva, lengthy tshuva, back and forth. Reb Kiveger wrote on the tshuva, I agree with everything my son wrote. And this lady is permitted to get remarried. And he writes at the end of the tshuva, and anyone that has anything else to say about the matter, and anyone who thinks that she can't get remarried, he's going to be in big trouble. And he's going to suffer, and bad things are going to happen to him. So Rav Pam says that's not the Rebbe Kiveger that we know of. Rebbe Kiveger was a loving, cared about every Jew. Why would he write such strong lashonis? Says Rav Pam, because Rebbe Kiveger was worried that some genius is going to wake up one day and say, you know what? I disagree with the cheshbon. I think she's really not allowed to get remarried. So this girl went and got remarried and has a whole other family, and you're going to ruin her whole family. Says Rav Pam, Rebbe Kiveger said, pegam mishpacha, to ruin an entire family, that's not something I'm going to stand. I'm not going to let that happen. I don't stand for that. I'm going to write a very strong wording in my tshuva to make sure no one decides that they're going to say, this whole family was all be'isser, she shouldn't have married him, and that's not the way it works. Says Rav Pam, pegam mishpacha, when you want to ruin an entire family, that's where we take a stand and we say, this we're not going to allow. And he quotes from the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim writes that when a person does such a thing, when he slanders an entire family, he says the tshuva for that is extremely difficult. It's very hard to get a kapara for that. It's a big, big aveira when you slander an entire family. And Rav Pam goes on to explain, this happens in many areas in our life. Sometimes it comes up in Shaduchim. We say, oh, I knew the grandfather, that's it, the whole family's possible. The grandfather was no good, the grandson, everyone's bad, I possible the whole family. Sometimes he writes, it happens sometimes in Chinuch. I had the older brother, he was bad, that's it, the younger brother, the whole family's done. The grandkids are bad, ad seif davis tenokin. He says, that's not right. He thinks that was the mistake of what these people wanted to do. They wanted to create this idea that Pagam Mishpacha, the whole Klal Yisrael is no good. We all come from Yishmael, so Yitzchak's no good, Yaakov's no good, the Shvatim are no good, everyone's no good. That's something that we have to take very seriously, says Rav Pam. That's the power of Leitzanis. And the Moshe Sternbach adds, the power of Leitzanim is, even after their arguments, have no water, they have nothing to hold on. But people forget that, and all they remember is what the Leitzanim said. He says, yes, many years later, anyone's going to read this, they'll say to themselves, Latsani Adah, what are you guys talking about? Of course Avimelech wasn't the father. But the way it works is in psychology is that we always forget the details and we only remember the big picture. What was that? Avram Avinu wasn't the father. That's what's going to last over and over and over, is that the idea of the late son. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which we can add according to the Gemara B'Metzia, Hashem went out of his way to change Teva and change a baby from looking one way to another just to ensure we don't have this late son Hadar wreaking havoc in Klal Yisrael's future. There is a Medrash Tanchuma which we have to mention. I don't attempt to explain it. The Medrash Tanchuma says not only did the late son Hadar say this, Avram Avinu himself said this. A very, very difficult Medrash Tanchuma. The Medrash Tanchuma says Avram Avinu was also choshed at his wife Sarah. He writes, "Beliboy choshev kein." Avram Avinu in his heart thought maybe Taka Sarah was with Avimelech, and that's why Hakadosh Baruch Hu made Avram Avinu look like Yitzchak. Now, obviously, this is a Medrash you can't take sitting down. Avram Avinu really doubted his wife. He really, how can we say such a thing about Avram Avinu and Sarah? So they want to say some creative pshat and that Avram Avinu made up that he's going to doubt her. Because if this way, she becomes like a saita. And the halacha is, if a saita is found to be innocent, so she drinks the water, and she gets pregnant. So Avraham Avinu was like a lam de shechap over here. He figured that if he'll be choishet his wife, she'll become like a seita. So if she becomes like a seita, she drinks the water, then she'll get pregnant. Okay, I don't know. It's a very troubling medrash, but it's there. It's a medrash Tanchuma that discusses exactly Avraham Avinu's thought process as well. There is a machloikis about exactly when did this story happen where HaKadosh Baruch Hu was worried about the Leitzanim. The Alshulch has a chiddush. The Alshulch says this happened when Esav was born. He said, why? He says, till Esav was born, no one started with the rumors. Because they knew the rumors wouldn't last. Why would anyone think it? Then all of a sudden Esav comes on the scene. All of a sudden we say to Esav, what's going on with Esav? Where did Esav come from? How could there be an Esav? How could Yaakov give birth to an Esav? The answer is, I can tell you how Yaakov gave birth to an Esav. If Yaakov really didn't come from Avraham Avinu, then it all makes sense. So once we saw already now that things are not as simple. It's not, as we say, peachy rosy in the Avraham Avinu family. There is a break in what we'd consider the chain of events of regular children. We have an Esav that's now abnormal. He's not like Avraham Avinu. He's not like his father Yitzchak. So maybe something isn't kosher, as we say. That's the Alshulch's pshat. It doesn't seem to work with the Gemara. The way we read the Gemara seems to be telling us that this all happened way before all of this. This all happened at the time of Yitzchak Avinu. The Kli Yakar points out something which we talked about last time. He quotes that there's a difference between calling someone a son of someone else and saying Avram Hoylid es Yitzchak. He says that many times when we call people a son of someone else. For example, the Gemara says if you teach someone Torah, they're called your sons. That's a son. He said, but there's something called Hoylid, to give birth to. He explains the difference is when you say someone's your son, that means he's copying the traits that you have. He doesn't necessarily have them in his DNA, but he's following a Rebbe and a Talmud. A Talmud follows his Rebbe's traits, and he tries to mimic or copy them, but he doesn't really have them in his DNA because he didn't give birth to him. When you're moiled to someone, when you give birth to someone, you pass on your DNA to that person. Says the Kli Yakar, that's what the Torah is telling us in this parasha. Avraham moiled es Yitzchak. Those traits of Avraham Avinu could have been passed down through being a ben, like it was to Yishmael. Yeah, it was there, even to Light. They were Talmidim, they filed, they picked up, but it wasn't transmitted the same way when you actually give birth to someone. Avram Hoylid. Says the Kli Yakar, we don't find that term by Yishmael, even though we know biologically speaking, Avram Avinu fathered Yishmael, but this term of Hoylid, to give birth, is something more than that. It means that I'm passing on to you my DNA, my makeup of who I am, I'm giving to you. And that explains what we asked last time. Why did Lloyd not become like Avraham Avinu? Because he was only a ben. He was a student. He didn't have it in his DNA. Yitzchak had it because he was a moilet. He was born from Avraham Avinu. That's why children have much more of their parents' DNA than they could from their Rebbeim. Because yes, I watch my Rebbe, I mimic my Rebbe, but it's not in my DNA. It's not my makeup. As opposed to Avraham Hoylidus Yitzchak, it changes the entire makeup of who Yitzchak was. And that's why only the Torah refers to this by Yitzchak and not by Yishmael. So now we're ready to discuss Yitzchak, the next chain in the Messiah of Klal Yisrael, the obvious, or built Klal Yisrael. Now we're going to discuss who Yitzchak was. All we know about Yitzchak was he got married late. Not much we know about Yitzchak. He got married rather late in life. He got married at 40. The Pasuk tells us, Vahi Yitzchak ben Abayim Shana. Yitzchak was 40 years old when he decided to get married. The Arachayim HaKadosh points out that nowhere else in the Torah does the Torah feel the urge to tell us at what age the people get married. That's not our business. Says the Arachayim HaKadosh, why Yitzchak? Because you have to ask yourself, why did he get married so late? The Arachayim HaKadosh says, Yitzchak got married at 40 because he was waiting for one girl, Rivka. That was it. There was no other option for whom Yitzchak could marry. This one girl was his only option, and he was waiting until it was ready to happen. There was not even like another girl backup, if this didn't work out, you know, something like that. She was it. She was the only girl for him, as we're going to see later on. Even when he knew he at that point he couldn't have children with Rivka, he didn't opt to take another woman like his father did. This was it. Rivka was it. So he was going to wait until Rivka was ready. So the question is, so why did he wait so long? So there's an unbelievable medrash. The medrash says that Avraham Avinu Yitzchak could not get married until he went through the Akedah. Why? So the medrash says that Yishmael used to tell Yitzchak, I'm much greater than you. I did more Mesiras Nefesh than you did. He says, wow, you're bris? You were 8 days old. Big deal. I was 13. I was a big kid already. I decided to consciously allow my body to be given to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with a bris. What did you do? You were 8 days old. So I'm on a higher level than you. Says the medrash, Yitzchak had to counteract that. The only way Yitzchak counteracted was to do something bigger than that. What was that? That was the Akedah. And it's clear from the Medrash that this taina of Yishmael seemed to have been a real taina. You could just listen, Yishmael, leave me alone. I'm better than you because I'm learning and you're doing bad things. No, this was apparently a fundamental step in getting married for Yitzchak was going through an Akedah. Proving his loyalty to HaKadosh Baruch Hu was something he needed to do before getting married. I think we could talk a lot about that, not for tonight, about how that connects to getting married. A person realizing loyalty before he's ready to get married, he has to be loyal. Realize where his loyalty lies. So first he had to realize his loyalty to Kadosh Baruch Hu, then he's ready to realize it for a spouse. But says the man, she couldn't get married. So first the Akedah, okay? The Akedah didn't happen until he was 37. He's got to wait until he was 37. So why between 37 and 40? So the manager says it took him 3 years to get over his mother's loss. He couldn't. It took him 3 years to properly mourn and move on from losing his mother. Now he's ready to get married, 40. He passed the Akedah, he got over his mother's loss, now he's first ready to get married. That's why the Torah first introduces us at this point, the idea that Yitzchak is ready to get married. Rashi tells us, how old was Rivka when she got married? So Rashi says she was 3. There's a famous Tosfos in Yevamos, Daf Samach Aleph Amud Beis, where Tosfos works the numbers not like that. Tosfos comes out, she was really 14 at the wedding, and not 3. What is Tosfos' motivation? So Tosfos says, I'll prove it. He says, we know, I worked out the numbers a lot today, sat down with accountants and actuaries, crunched a lot of numbers to make this work. I worked this out in the morning with my Talmid to make sure we get all the numbers right. So the way the numbers go is like this. It's a pretty simple mathematical equation. We know that Rivka died at the age of 133. The Medrash says that Rivka lived the same amount as Kahas. Kahas, the Torah says, died at 133. So we know she died at 133. We also know, assuming that Rashi is correct, so she got married at 3, we know that it took 20 years to have the kids. So then she was 23 at the time of the birth. We also know that Yaakov Avinu was 63 when he received the brachas. So if Yaakov was 63 and Rivka was 23 when she had him, so how old was Rivka at the brachas? Okay, we all know. Okay, good. So what happened next? We know then Yaakov left for 20 years to learn and to work for Laban. Then he was 14 years learning. Then he was 2 years on the road. That's 36 years. By the time that all ended, that's when Rivka died. So if you crunch the numbers, it's going to come out that she couldn't have been married at 3. If you crunch all those numbers, you'll see we're 11 years off. Therefore, says Tosfos, you got to move things around. She didn't get married at 3. She got married at 14. Therefore, we have 11 years. Everything works out. The reason why I like this Tosfos, because I think it makes sense based on another Tosfos. There's a Tosfos in Baba Basra, Kuf Mem Aleph, that asks, why couldn't Yitzchak marry his sister? If Yitzchak had a sister, like the Gemara says in Baba Basra, her name was Bakurl, so why couldn't they marry each other? Tosfos says, at that time, Ben Noach was allowed to marry his sister. So Tosfos gives an answer that he had a sister, but she was too young to get married. So everyone says, too young? Or was she a year and a half? Rivka was 3. How much younger are you going to be? So if you say like this, Tosfos, it's not a question. Rivka wasn't 3. Rivka was 14. She's a big girl, 14 already. She was collecting a pension. She was old already, 14, right? So therefore, Rivka was 14. Yitzchak's sister was little, so that's why she couldn't get married. So it works out very nicely. Tosfos l'shitasai, according to this, to assume that Rivka was really 14 instead of being 3. But Rashi, the way we have it, Rashi says she was really only 3. She wasn't 14. The pasuk goes out of its way to describe Rivka, who she was. Torah says, who is Rivka? She's Bas Besuel, Ha'arami, Mipadan Aram, Machois Lavan Arami. Give us a whole yichus. Why? So Rashi says, the reason why he gives us a yichus is to tell us how great she is. Look where she came from. She had a horrible father, horrible brother, horrible community, and she still became a Rivka. The Rechem HaKadosh says, no, the pasuk is tipping us off to seeing how on earth can there be an Esav coming out of this relationship. He says, I'll tell you why. Look at Rivka's family. Her family was the reason why we have an Esav today. It didn't come from his side of the family, it came from her side of the family. This is really setting us up for understanding, how could there be an Esav? Such a wonderful person like Yitzchak and Rivka was so special, the answer is yeah. Rivka was very special, her family wasn't. And many times these things come out in the next generation. And therefore says, the Arachayim HaKadosh, the Torah is kind of giving us the heads up to explain, why is there going to be an Esav? Because of Rivka's family. What's interesting is that you think to yourself, if Avraham Avinu was looking for a shidduch for his wife, for his son, Avraham Avinu was very wealthy, very popular, the big gadol of the time. So why did he take Rivka? I said, we're so makpatei for shidduchim, we got to find out, you know, who the fourth cousin was. We look into everything. So why didn't Avraham Avinu look and say, forget it, look at her. Her father's a disaster, her brother's a rasha, the town is a bunch of mishayim, I'm not marrying this girl. You see clearly that Rivka had something so special, so amazing, that no matter what her background presented, that was not a reason for Avraham Avinu not to take her as a daughter, or for Yitzhak to marry her. Now we need to discuss what was so special about Rivka. It wasn't where she came from. She's great despite her background, not because of her background. But clearly what was important to Avraham Avinu and Yitzchak was not where she came from, who her brother was, who her father was. That wasn't important. Even though possibly they knew this might happen. They knew that might happen that you're going to end up with an Esav. But it was worth it, because you also had a Yaakov from it. So clearly Chazal are teaching us what's really important when picking spouses. And the Balatur, the pasuk goes on to tell us, now we're presented with a dilemma that befalls Yitzchak and Rivka. The pasuk tells us, "Vayeta Yitzchak laHashem lenoicha achishte." The pasuk starts telling us that Yitzchak is already davening, ki akara he, because his wife is an akara. So we would have thought it goes the other way around. She was an akara, that's why he davened. It's not that he davened and that's why she's an akara. Seems to be somewhat reversed. So this seems to be a very strong right to a very famous Gemara, that the Gemara says, why were the Imois all infertile? Why were they not able to have children? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves the tefillas of tzaddikim. Now that sounds very cruel. That's like when you smack a little kid because you like the way he cries. That doesn't seem right. But that's what the Gemara says. And it's mashma like that from the pasuk. Because what does the pasuk say? Vayeta Yitzchak. It says he first davened because. Not that she was an akara, that's why he davened. It was actually the backwards. Vayeta Yitzchak, he davened ki akara he. That was the whole motivation, was to get to the davening. There's an interesting shayla in the Balat Turim, as Tupshatim, was Yitzchak unable to have children, or only Rivka was unable to have children? Who was the problem, so to say? So if you read the pasuk, it says, ki akara hi, because she was the one who wasn't able to have a child. The implication would be that Yitzchak had no problem. On top of that, we know the pasuk says, ki bi Yitzchak yikara l'chazara. Yitzchak knew he was having kids. This wasn't an issue. Hashem told him. So obviously she was the one that had an issue. Nonetheless, the Balat Turim has a pshat that nope. Maybe it was really her also. Maybe it was also him. Even though it says he's supposed to read it, who? They both had problems having children. The Meshech Chachma brings down a pshat, which I found later, is also brought down in the Sforno. If you look in the pasuk, it says, L'noichach ishtoi. What does that mean, L'noichach ishtoi? So the Medrash says, L'noichach ishtoi means b'shvil ishtoi. He davened for his wife. What does it mean, says the Meshech Chachma? Yitzchak Avinu knew he was going to have kids. This didn't bother him. He knew he was having kids. So what does it mean, L'noichach ishtoi? He wanted it to be that his kids came from Rivka. He didn't want it to be like his father, that it's going to come from another woman. He wanted that my kids should be from you. You, Rivka, are so special, I want you to be the mother of my children. I'm going to have kids either way. But l'noichach ishtoi means I want it to be, I did it for you. B'shvil ishtoi, says the Medrash. Says the Meshech Chachma, he did it just for his wife because he wanted his wife to be, Rivka should be the mother of Klal Yisrael. Again, another way of Chazal telling us how special Rivka was. Not only was she fit to be the wife of Yitzchak, she was going to be the aim of Klal Yisrael. Her and no one else. Abayin B'chaya writes something here so powerful. He writes, you see from this story, he says, I'll quote you what he writes. He says, you see the koyach ha-tfilo, va-filo yesh koyach l'shanais ha-teva. Tfilo is so strong that it can even change nature. Sounding from Abayin B'chaya, he was assuming al-pi derech ha-teva, Rivka was unable to have a baby. It wasn't happening. Yet the ability of the tfilo of Avraham, of Yitzchak and Rivka was so powerful, it was able to change teva. This is a little bit of a controversial statement if you're allowed to daven against Teva. Meaning a person, if it might be ready davening for a nace, but Rabbeinu B'chaya says, we learn from this story of Avram, about davening, that a person can daven with so much kayach and so much feeling that he can change nature. Which sounds like that Rivka al-Piderech HaTeva should have not conceived the baby. And the only reason why they married to have a child was through the power of the tefillah of Yitzchak and Rivka.
Can I just interrupt for a second? Sorry. Is there an extra Mikros Gedolos? Friedman just asked
sure.
Me again, well, I'm sorry.
No problem. I wasn't using either of them, so at least I can give one back. No, I had them open. I wasn't really using them. I thought it would help me remember things about it. So the question that the Biskarov asks, he says that Yitzchak and Rivka were not the first couple that had trouble having a baby. Avram and Sarah had trouble having a baby. It's almost genetic, so to say. Why don't we find anywhere that Sarah davened? Why didn't Avraham Avinu and Sarah davening for a baby? The first time we're exposed to our others davening for a child is when we come to the story of Yitzchak and Rivka. Why by Avraham Avinu and Sarah no one davened? So the Brisker Rav said, because Sarah knew it was impossible to have a baby. She didn't have a uterus. You can't have a baby without that. No matter how you daven or what you do, you can go to any Rebbe in the world. It's not happening. Says the Brisker Rav, Avraham and Sarah felt it's a tefillah shof. It's a waste of a tefillah. We don't daven for miracles. That's a miracle. You want to ask for a Yeshua, for a salvation, you could do that. But this is it's not happening. It's a no-go. So they didn't even bother davening, says the Brisker Rav. This seems not to be like what we just said from Rabbeinu B'chaya. It seems like Rivka, Piderech HaTeva, couldn't conceive either. But he says Rivka was a regular, good old-fashioned, what we call today, unexplained. There was no reason why she shouldn't have a baby. They did the workup. She seemed to have everything was right. It was unexplained. That's a term today they use the doctors, unexplained infertility. So for unexplained, that's when you daven. That's when you can daven to get a Yeshua. That's the Brisker Rav's pshat. The Nesiva Shalom, just to add, that was a chiddush, the way the Brisker Rav is saying that somehow Avram and Sarah knew what was their problem. I don't know how they knew that exactly, but somehow they knew that was their issue. The Yeshiva Shalom explains slightly different. And we mentioned this last time. The Yeshiva Shalom says that Avraham Avinu and Sarah were so in tune to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they said to themselves, listen, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you want this to happen, you're going to make it happen. If you're not giving us a baby, it's because you believe we're not supposed to have one. And that's it. We're going to accept it. We're not going to go beyond what's normal. You can make it happen. This is all what we call api derech hateva. If you're not sending us a baby, we're not going to go beyond that because we don't need it. Because if we need it and we're supposed to have it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would give it to us. Now that's obviously an unbelievable level of dveikus b'Hashem to be connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They say about the Chassam Sofer, the Chassam Sofer was married twice. His first marriage, he had no children. He got married again and then he ended up having children. So someone once asked the Chassam Sofer, why don't you go to like a... get a bracha from somebody. He said, I'm looking at what my Rebbe did, the Hafla. The Hafla, I think, also only had one kid. He didn't have a large family. And he said, my Rebbe never did any of these types of, you know, Rebbe stuff, and these, they didn't do it. Why? Because Baruch wants me to have a baby, he'll give me the baby. If he doesn't want me to have it, that's... And there are still people today, out of Yemezeh, some Hasidish sects that believe. That's why they don't go into a lot of the infertility that we have today, because of medicine. Some Hasidish hold they're not allowed to use any of that. They will not use any of the infertility science that we have today because they feel that's too much mishing and rain in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world. If Hashem wants you to have a baby, I'll give you a baby. Who are you? Start taking science, technology, and mixing things. They hold that's... Rav Moshe held not like that, and predominantly almost all the Litvish world held not like that. They held, no, no. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the science, we should use it. But there is such a thought even out of Yemezeh. There are still Chassidim who believe like that. And that's what Avraham Avinu felt. Avraham Avinu felt, if Hashem wants me to have a baby, he'll give me a baby. I'm not going beyond that. Apparently Yitzchak felt not like that. It's an unbelievable story. I don't tell over stories that often, but this is a story that's worth repeating. There's an unbelievable organization in the fertility world today called Bnei Olam. They do terrific work. Atayim also does terrific work. I don't think they had these in the times of Avinu and Yitzchak. They didn't have these types of organizations that help you. But the story goes the following, that there was a couple that was trying very, very hard to have a baby, and they were going through many, many procedures, IVF, which costs a lot of money, and it's very, very emotionally draining. It's very difficult. It's very time sensitive. The way these procedures work is that it's the craziest times. You have to go on Friday night. You have to go on Shabbos day. Whenever things are ready to go, you have to go and you have to go to the hospital, to the lab. Very, very difficult. Very, very strenuous on any in any situation. So this couple, it was their last shot, and they went to the head of Bnei Olam, this guy, fellow Shlomo Bachner, Shlomo Bachner, and they said, the doctors say it's not happening. They're not having a baby. But there's one specialist that they can meet. It's going to cost tons and tons of money to meet with him. Are we mechuyev to spend the money on this couple? So he paskin, he asked someone, they said, yeah, you have to try to spend the money. So they went to the doctor, and the doctor said, no go. They tried it. The doctor said, listen, guys, it's not happening. You're not having a baby. So the couple drove back from the hospital, and the husband dropped off his wife, and he said he just needs to be alone. So he drove around the neighborhood just thinking and putting it all in, you know, trying to come to terms with what he just heard. And finally, whatever it was, 45 minutes, an hour later, he comes to his house, and he opens the door, and he sees the tables set for Shabbos with the china. And his wife said, I just came to terms that this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants for us. I don't understand it. I don't know why. But this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. And I'm accepting it b'simcha rabba. I'm accepting it with happiness that we're going to be together and we're going to open a new chapter in our life and everything's going to be fine because this is what Hashem wants from us. This is not a story of 2,000 years ago. This is a story of last year. Regular people. For as far as I know, this girl's not any Grace Rebbetzin. She's a regular girl who said to herself, this is what Hashem wants. I'm going to say, Mamash, what sarid? So they sat down and they had this meal and they came and they were besimcha. They were genuinely happy with their newfound mahalach hachayim. The next morning at 5 a.m. they get a phone call from the doctor. We see something that might be something. Please come in. As Rishon Bachner says a story, a year later he was called to be sandik at the bris. Unbelievable. They had a baby. When they come to terms and saying, listen, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm accepting it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends them unbelievable Yeshua. A very, very powerful story. But it's not someone for only Sarah Imenu. People in our generation are living like this, where they're coming to terms with HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives them, and they're willing to accept the way of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what happens? So they start to daven. Tefillah is always very powerful. So the Pasuk tells us whose tefillahs were answered. Says the Pasuk that Rashi says that his tefillahs were answered. Rav Avinu's tefillahs were answered. Why, says Rashi? Because he's a tzaddik ben tzaddik, and she was ben Yitzchak's tefillahs were answered and not hers. Reb Steinman points out something very interesting. He says, if I had to guess whose tefillahs were going to be answered, I would have thought it was going to be Yitzchak's tefillahs. Not because of his father. Because he's Yitzchak. He's a big Rosh Hashiva. He learns Torah all day. He was a big gadol. If I had to think whose tefillahs are going to work, I would have just, you know, if I had to bet, I'd say it's going to be Yitzchak. Says Reb Steinman, you see from this Rashi, that that's not true. Yitzchak and Rivka were on the same footing. On their own merits, they both were equal in the power of tefillah. The only reason why Avraham Avinu won was he played the Schos Avos card. Says Reb Shteinman, we shouldn't take for granted the power of Tefillas HaNoshim, the power of a Tefillah from a woman. You say, well, what do you mean? But the man is the one who's sitting and learning. He's the Rosh Hashiva. It's not true. Rivka was equal. She could have got the same Yeshua in her Tzchus. If not for the fact that Yitzchak had Tzchus of us. Something to remember about the power of Tefillas is not gender-based. Because Baruch Hu doesn't look at Tefillas with gender. He looks at Tefillas with who's davening and what the purpose of the Tefillah is. Says Reb Shteinman, that's why Rivka was on the same level as Yitzchak. Many of Farshim talk about this doesn't seem to be fair. If I had to think whose tefillah should be more powerful, not the kid who grew up in the Jewish house. What's the big deal? Yitzchak, his father was a tzaddik, he was a tzaddik. Okay, I always joke, you know, if I was 5 years old and someone was teaching me shas at 5 years old, I'd also be a big gadol today. You know, that's easy. What did Rivka come from? She had a much harder life. She was the one who really turned it around. Shouldn't her tefillahs be more powerful in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So the Mefarshim discusses how exactly does tefillahs work with chosavis, something which is hard to understand sometimes, but we use chosavis all the time. If you read the Rosh Hashanah davening, all day long we're going back to chosavis. Never ends. HaKadosh Baruch Hu save us, not for us. Save us because of our men Yitzchak and Yaakov. All day long we're going back to chosavis. So chosavis is clearly a very, very, very powerful tefillah. They used to say about the Yismach Moshe, the first Satmar Rebbe, who was really a Litvish of the Yismach Moshe. He was really was born and bred Litvish Yid. And what happened was his daughter married a Chassidisha. And he got exposed to the Chassidisha lifestyle and became a Chassidish. So what ended up happening is he became a Rebbe. So when people used to come for him with tzaris, so he would help them, like any good Rebbe does. And they used to say, oh, the Rebbe helped us. He said, no, it's not me. It's Chosavis. It's Chosavis. It's all Chosavis. So that today, many Rebbes will tell you that. If you go to Rebbes today, they'll tell you it's not me. It's Chosavis. It's Manzeda, the Alta Zeda. It's all Chosavis. There's definitely something true about the power of Chosavis, that they're really what's helping us be successful. But the Pasuk says that finally, Baruch Hashem, she gets pregnant. Great. But Tahar Rivka Yishtoi, Rivka gets pregnant. I can imagine the simcha, you can imagine how happy and joyous everyone was. And then all of a sudden things go quickly, very, very quickly go sour. Vayisraitis u'abonim b'kirba. Although Rivka was very happy to be pregnant, she's noticing there's some issues. Vayisraitis u'abonim b'kirba. There seems to be some form of a problem with the pregnancy. The way Rashi learns is that what happened was that when they'd go by yeshiva, one baby tried to get out, and they would go by a base of Eidazara, and then the other baby tried to get out. That's why Yisraitis Rabbanim, there was some form of fight going on inside. So the question that many ask, they say, okay, I understand why Esav wanted to leave, I get Esav. Where did Yaakov want to go? Gemara tells us in Nida that when you're in utero, you learn Kol HaTorah Kulo with the Malach. Who's better out there than the Malach? Where are you getting better? You think you get a better Chavusa out there? You got the best! You got Torah on the purest level. Chaim Soloveitchik asked this question. Rav Yosef asked this question. Where was Yaakov running to go? So Chaim Soloveitchik says, you see from here an unbelievable idea. Torah is great and Torah is important. But if the guy sitting next to you is no good, you got to find somewhere else to learn. Oyle Rasha, the Shechina says, Chaim Soloveitchik is true even in learning. You could have the best chavrus, but if the guy sitting next to you, your next door neighbor, your roommate is no good, you got to leave. You got to get out. Even if the Torah won't be the same level. Again, learning with a malach is not the same as learning with a bas of a dom. But you're not going to be successful if you have a bad Russia shechina next to you. You are going to be affected and you have to get out. The other pshat that they say over was that Yaakov wanted to have a toil in learning. When a person is in utero, the malach just feeds it to you. No work. No yigiyas atayim. Yaakov wanted to have yigiyas atayim. He wanted to get out there and break his head over a Rambam. He wanted to work out a shtickle atayim. He didn't want to be told it. He wanted to toil in learning. To which, again, Yeruchim Levavitz points out, this is all very hard for us to talk about. We don't know what any of this means. In utero, they have all these feelings and they have all these ideas. It's very hard for us to understand what exactly takes place in utero. There is an interesting tshuva from Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe Feinstein says a tshuva in Igbos Moshe Yerodei Chelik Beis, where Rav Moshe discusses an idea of inducing a baby before its time. Rav Moshe discusses, is it permissible for a person to induce labor because it works out better for the doctor's schedule? Not because it's a danger to the baby, the baby's Baruch Hashem healthy, but the doctor, the holiday's coming up, or Shabbos is coming up, Rav Moshe says, and he doesn't want to deliver on Shabbos, can you induce? So Rav Moshe writes in the Tshuva, absolutely not, he thinks it's not correct, but he comes up with an interesting svari. He says, because really, childbirth is dangerous. It's naturally dangerous. That's why many Paiskim hold when a lady has a baby, she's supposed to bench Goyimo, because she put herself in some form of a dangerous situation. So Rav Moshe says, that siyata d'shmaya, that Kosh Baruch Hu promises that women won't get hurt in childbirth is only if you give birth at the right time. If you start mishing a rhyme, you start playing around with when the baby's supposed to come, you lose it. And then you're putting your wife in sakon. That's Rav Moshe's psak, and he's very strong about there's no head to induce. Rav Moshe Shtermich has a tshuva likewise, where he discusses from an Arizal. The Arizal said if you bring a baby out too early, you affect its mazel. If you induce a baby, you bring the baby out earlier than it should, It throws off its whole life. It could be rich, poor, smart, not. It throws off the baby's whole mazel. He says the Arizal would not daven for babies to be born early. He didn't want to hear about it. Babies come when they're ready. Not our job. Because this idea, if we don't know what goes on in Europe, maybe it's because, I always thought it's because of the Bittul Torah. You pull a baby out early, it's a Shaila Bittul Torah. The baby's sitting and learning, and you pull the baby out early. Who gives you the right to do that? It's learning on a malach. It's a serious thing. It's clearly from this week's parasha, we see it's a real thing. So therefore, who gives you the right to take the baby out early? Obviously, if it's a sakana, you have to. But that's an interesting discussion that they discuss about what goes on in utero. There's a piece from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky in Vizayis HaBracha, where there's a Ramon Shulchan Aruch, where the Ramon rules, if a person supports Torah, he gives money to Torah, so he gets reward as if he himself learned Torah. Which means, he fulfills the obligation of Vigisa Bayam Valayla if he supports Torah. Rabbi Aaron Kotler and others say not only that, but when this person goes up to Shemayim, when he's in the Olam Haba, they're going to put him in the same section with all the Loim Dei Torah. They're going to put him in the section with all the rabbis who learned all day. And he's going to talk to them and learning. So Yaakov Kamenetsky says that. What's he going to tell them? This fellow was a great person. He spent his day working, which is very, very respected. And he supported Torah. But he didn't learn the Torah. He supported Torah, which is very important. We need that. But he didn't actually sit down and learn. How is he going to be put in the section with Reb Kivager and Reb Shimon and Reb Chaim and talk about a Rambam, which he never saw? So he says Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, he says no. He says, what happens is, like the Gemara says in Nidah, when we're in utero, we all learn Kala Torah Kula. Then we forget it. Why do we forget it? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to work in this world. So the whole time we're working in this world is to get back all that information. He says, but if a person spends his day toiling to support Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu lets him get back that Torah that he learned in utero. So that's how he knows all the Torah. He'll know it because he got it from when he was in utero. Why didn't he forget it? Because since he toiled in this world in a productive way of toiling because he went to support Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not cause him to forget and he'll be able to remember his Torah and be put in the section with all the great leaders. Very interesting idea about what goes on exactly in utero. A little bit hard to understand. But the pasuk tells us that after she finds out about that, this Vayisraytesu b'kirba, she says, Im kein lo mazeh anoichi? Why did I need this? Why do I need all this? All this davening and all these things I did was for this. What exactly was her issue? So this is also many different pshatim. Rashi learned that she regretted the whole thing. She said, if this is the case, why do I need this pregnancy? All this, hey, why do I need it for? The Kliyaka learned that she was convinced she has a baby with two personalities. She wasn't thinking that there was twins. She was thinking that this child is going to be, you know, a special child with multi-personalities. She stayed with Shuyes. Why do I need that? I want, you know, give me a regular baby. I don't want a baby that has split personality. Also, the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh learns that she was convinced that this baby wasn't going to make it. This is going to be a miscarriage. This baby's not going to survive. So she said, Imkin, lomaz anechi, what do I need this for? Why does Baruch Hu tease me? Give me a baby, make me pregnant, and the baby's not going to survive. It's such a tease. Why do I need it? Imkin, lomaz anechi, why do I need it? Rav Asher Weiss points out, he says, you know, isn't that amazing? So people, you would have thought that the reason why she wanted a baby was to have a baby. So the fact that her baby won't be the best, so he'll be even if I deserve. But at least she'll have a baby. She'll have kids. She'll have grandchildren. Isn't that what she wanted? Says Rabbi Shmuel, absolutely not. To Rivka, having a child wasn't just to have a baby, to have a dependent on your tax returns. That wasn't what she wanted. She wanted a baby who's going to go in the ways of Hashem. If she figured out that one of her babies are not going to go in the ways of Hashem, I don't need it. I don't want to be a mother just to be a mother. I want to be a mother to build Klal Yisrael. If my baby's not going to build Klal Yisrael, lama zeh anochi? What's it worth? Points out to Brisker Rav. But what about Yaakov? Well, he's chopped liver all of a sudden. Well, what was your option? You're going to abort the baby and then you're not even going to have a Yaakov. Says the Brisker Rav, she was willing to take that. She was willing to say, if I'm going to bring an Esav into the world, it's not worth the whole shebang. Forget Yaakov. Don't have anything. If I'm going to bring an Esav into the world who's not going to live a Torah life, it's not worth it. Imkein, lama zeh anochi? Why do I need any of this? She went to seek out Hashem. What did she want? So here's also machlokes. Some of Farshim learned she went for a bracha. She went to find out what's going to be. She went to b'shoyel etzah. She went for a bracha. She went for someone to daven on her behalf. The Rashbam writes she went to the Nevi'im of the generation. Rashi says she went to Shem. The Sifrei Chacham asks, why didn't you go to Avraham Avinu? Great Avraham Avinu. So he suggests, and others suggest, because it's a little uncomfortable to bring your personal problems to family. Avraham Avinu was her father-in-law. It's not exactly very comfortable to bring your personal issues, whatever's going on in your life, to your father-in-law. Also, others say they didn't want to bother Avraham Avinu, be mitzar him. This is his big nachas. He's waiting for this. And he's going to find out his future grandson is a shtei reshuyah, see? They didn't want to bother. I always thought the answer is different. The reason why they went to Shem and Avraham Avinu, because this wasn't necessarily a halachic shayla. This is what we call experience. Avraham Avinu was younger than Shem. Shem was much older. Shem was the son of Noach. Shane's been around. He saw a lot. You want to go to the person who's seen the most experience. He's been around. He maybe Shane heard of such a case before in his generation where a baby was acting like this. So she went to Shane because it wasn't just a halachic mutter usser question. This was a general question of how the world works, the way of life. So he wanted to go to someone who was more experienced, someone who was out there more, someone who saw the way, and this way they'll be able to give them a better picture of what exactly is going on. And ultimately the Pasuk says that she got her report and that somehow made her feel better. Pasuk tells us later on, Vayidu ha-Narim, and now we're introduced to an Esav and Yaakov. And the Pasuk tells us about Yaakov, he was an Ish Tam. Right? We have today Rabbeinu Tam. How did Rabbeinu Tam get his name? His name was Yaakov. But just like Yaakov was an Ish Tam, so he got the name Rabbeinu Tam. That's how the Baal Tosis Rabbeinu Tam, his name is Rabbeinu Tam, from this Pasuk and Ish Tam. So now all of a sudden, now they go their separate paths in life, so to say. Yaakov becomes the great Yaakov, while Esav becomes the thug lowlife that we know of. What's interesting is the Kli Yaakov learns, and the Pasuk says that Esav was Yedea Tzayid, Ish Sadeh, doesn't mean he was a trapper. It means he was taking women. He learns that Ish Yedea Tzayid means he was, all day long, he was stealing other people's wives. That's all he did all day. That was his thing. He wasn't trapping, he wasn't a hunter. He was an Ish Yedea Ish Sadeh. All that means was he was taking women that weren't his. As opposed to Yaakov Ishtam, he says Yaakov was nolod mohol. Yaakov was born with a brismila. He was able to control himself. That's why he didn't do these things. But Esav was wild. Esav was uncontrollable, and therefore Esav was different. And then the last pasuk which we're going to get to today is the description of the Torah about Yitzhak's relationship with Esav and Rivka's relationship with Yaakov. Many people read this pasuk, they get the feeling that Yitzhak was that spaced out dad. Like doesn't get like right under his nose, his kid is doing kol davara. And Yitzchak is just one of those fathers who think, oh, my son is great. But really behind his back, he's doing everything wrong. Yeah, Yitzchak was one of those out-of-touch fathers. I don't believe that's the case. And the Medrash says clearly that's not the case. The Medrash says Yitzchak knew exactly what Esav was up to. He was not tricked. He wasn't fooled. He said to himself, what's my other option? I push him away, I'm going to lose him completely. Let me bring him in. Let me hold him close. This way, whatever I can get out of him, I'll get out of him. Because if I completely reject him and I kick him out of my house, he'll be a nothing. But if I can hold on to a little bit of him, and this is what we do today, it's not easy today, but sometimes you got to take the kid and say, listen, we're going to hold on to you because whatever we can get out of you is worth it. It's worth it. Yitzchak said, I know Esav is not the tzaddik behind closed doors and he's davening and learning. I know he's not. I know he's a troublemaker. But I'm going to hold on to him. This is the Medrash saying, but I'm going to hold on to him. Yet there's another exact opposite Medrash, but the Medrash says it was a tainan Yitzchak. He didn't rebuke him enough. He kind of let him slide a little bit. He let Esav get away with more than he should have. Should have rebuked him. Should have called him out on it. He should have said, this is not right. Yitzchak was afraid to rebuke him. If I'm a David HaMelech, David HaMelech also got in trouble for not rebuking his son enough. So that this balance of what we call tough love, being able to show love while still cracking down when you need to crack down, and being on top of what you need to be on top of, that was the balance that Yitzchak was dealing with his son Esav. And just the question that everyone needs to ask in the parasha was when Esav finds out he lost the Bechira, he's so upset. Why did Esav care about the Bechira? Bechira was the spirituality. It was the right to work in the Beis HaMikdash. Esav cared about the Bechira? So Rabban Cutler says, and I heard this, I saw this in the name of Chaim Kanevsky, Esav is not this punk that we all think about. Esav was a kid with taiva. He wasn't this horrible kid who didn't believe in God and thought the whole thing was crazy. He believed, he knew good and well. He was raising Yitzchak's house. He knew Torah was important and he knew HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. But he was a Baal Taiva. He had desires. He cared about this world more than he cared about the next world. But deep down, Esav knew what's important. Esav knew the Bechir was a big deal. Esav knew his father was a big deal. Esav knew what Torah was about. He couldn't live that lifestyle. Esav was not this kid who was so detached from the world where he didn't even understand it. He got it. But he was a Baal Taiva. And therefore, when he was able to put his Taiva aside, that's why he sold the Bechayra, because it was a quick fix. He needed that quick sensation of feeling good. But deep down, he realized that there's something important to it. It's not just this faraway thing called the Bechayra. That's why he was so careful with his father, and he didn't care much for his mother, the Mepharshim say, because he knew his father carried the power of Klola and Bracha. He realized his father was a big deal. He realized his father was a big godlin, and his father's curse means something, and his father's Bracha means something. He said, hey, Mom, she's not so powerful, so I can mess around with her. But Dad, I'm not going to mess with him. Dad, he's got power. Esav knew it. Esav was dealing with a lot. Esav was dealing with taiva. He was trying to live that lifestyle which wasn't right. But Esav deep down realized the importance of Torah, the importance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and ultimately he regretted what he did with the Bechir. Okay.